Okay. We're holding on Cliff Zion and Bays, nine lines from the top. In the middle of discussing the question of, we had yesterday, Machloekas Rav and Shmuel, if a woman comes to Beis Din and says, my husband is out of town, I need Mizonis, does Beis Din get involved and go sell property of his in order to raise money for her, or not? Is there the concern either that we said that he might have left aside Sruri, a bundle of money for her, and therefore they shouldn't be taking property away from him against that, or that they may have made the deal, that you'll keep your own earnings and you'll do your own mizonis. So we're still trying to bring proof to one side or the other. So far, we had several Mishnayos, our Mishnah, and several Brises that more straightforwardly we understand them according to Rav, but we can find a way to understand them according to Shmuel as well. Tashma, ha'isha shalcha hiu vayla l'mnes ha'yam, a woman and her husband together go overseas, ubas v'amra mes bali, and she comes back and says, my husband died. If at that point now we believe her to say that my husband died, as we learned in Yevamos, she's allowed to remarry. Since she's allowed to remarry, as we learned in Yevamos as well, she's entitled to collect her ksuba. That's the we learn from the wording we douche in Medrash ksuba over there, that when she's entitled to remarry, she's entitled to collect her ksuba.
She's not allowed to remarry immediately, though.
Well, she has to wait the usual 3 months, fine, but we're not getting into that right now. The point is, she is able to remarry, and she's saying, my husband died, so she can collect her ksuba. But rotza mizonis, rotza goiva ksubasa. If she wants, she can start collecting mizonis and hold off on collecting her ksuba. If she wants, she can collect her ksuba right there on the spot. On the other hand, gershani by
a period of time.
Well, so if she's collecting mizonis, she can collect mizonis. She, we believe her to collect her ksuba, and since also though, if she decides to collect her ksuba now, then fine, she doesn't get mizonis. But if she wants, she has the option, like any almana, of getting mizonis and waiting some time to collect her ksuba, so she can do that. All of her ksuba. No, mizonis is a separate thing than ksuba. Mizonis and then ksuba are two separate things. She's entitled to collect 100 or 200 or whatever it is for her ksuba. She's also entitled, as long as she's living as an almana and not remarrying out of covet for her husband or whatever it was, then she's entitled to mizonis.
But we learned previously that after a certain period of time...
So 25 years, whatever, that was a machloka. That was a machloka mayor and the chachamim when the 25 years applies anyway. We're not getting into that now, but whatever, long before 25 years we're talking, yeah. On the other hand, gershani bali, on the other hand, if she says, my husband divorced me, then she misparnesis v'hilachas ad kadek subasa. Then she can just take parnosa. She can just take mizonis up until the value of her ksuba. What's the deal? Rashi says maybe he divorced her. Maybe he didn't. When it comes to her saying her husband's dead, we do believe her for the reason we learned about in Yevamos. When it comes to her saying my husband divorced me, we don't necessarily believe her on her own words. So therefore, she's not entitled to collect her ksuba. Mizonis, we can give her, and we say, however you look at it, if she really is divorced, she is going to eventually, she's not entitled to mizonis, but she is entitled to ksuba. Fine, she'll be collecting it piecemeal. So she's collecting, $100 this year, $100 next year, whatever, until it adds up to the total value of ksuba. So this way, either way, she's collected the amount, yeah. Because either way, if she really is divorced, then she's entitled to a ksuba but not mizonis. If she's not divorced, she's entitled to mizonis and not ksuba. So the point is, again, she's coming and saying that I don't have mizonis. And we're talking about the case of the almana, and we're saying that if she wants, she can get mizonis. Or actually, in the case of the grusha. In the case of the Grusha, we're saying that she's entitled to mizonis up to the value of her ksuba. But according to Shmuel, we're saying it could be considered mizonis, it could be considered a ksuba. Whatever it is, the point is, according to Shmuel, again, don't we have Sorori Apasa or the Maitia Deva Mizonis Seah problem?
But how can we say it's mizonis when it's going to be deducted from the ksuba?
It's going to be deducted from the ksuba if it turns out that she wasn't divorced after all, then she's entitled to mizonis. Yeah.
Then
that's deducted from the ksuba. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the answer is Hachanami Kishama Boishemes. Fine. The case is also over here that they heard from Adim or whatever, but by hearsay that he died. So the question is, Umay Shnat Kzei Ksubah. So, well, in that case, then, why is she only entitled to collect up to the... She came, she says she got divorced. Now Edom come and say that actually he's dead. Yeah, after that. That Edom come and say that we heard by hearsay that he's dead.
After she comes.
So, yeah, so, but, so... Are they talking about, though, that he died before the date that she says she was divorced or after? The point is, they're not necessarily contradicting her per se, but the point is, the question is, then, why should not kedei ksubasa? In that case, then, why is she only entitled to collect up to the value of her ksuba? If you have these agents who are saying he's dead, then it should be like any regular case, that she's entitled to mizonis indefinitely until he comes back alive or whatever.
Before the agent came. Now the agent came, we might say differently.
But
up to now, we didn't have any.
No, because if according to Shmuel, the whole point is that when are we going to start giving her mizonis is only b'shoshama b'shemes. Because if she just comes and says, I got divorced, that's not reason enough. Okay, but we couldn't learn upstairs because they're cleaning up there, so, you know.
Yeah. יש סירות אל הקדימה, רייבין כאן, רוב לא שמה, רייבין.
What, interrupt in the middle and down in Meyer and then continue? I guess in a pinch. I guess we'll see that. I guess fine. We'll do that. Fine, we'll do that. Right. What else can we do? Okay, so she came and said, I'm divorced. According to Shmuel, that wouldn't be reason enough to start giving her possible mizonis yet, because yes, maybe she's divorced and therefore is entitled to her ksuba, but maybe not, and maybe her husband still left her tzorah or whatever the two possible reasons were, and therefore she can't get mizonis now either, and she can't get her ksuba, she can't get mizonis. If Edom then come and say that he's dead, then we go to the usual thing that Shmuel said at the beginning of the sugya, that he agrees that if we're told even by hearsay that he's dead, then that's reason enough at least to assume that up until then maybe he might have, besides the, but first of all he would have expected to be away only a certain amount of time, so he would have left money, eventually that runs out, he might have expected to be sending remittances home, and then now he can't do that anymore, etc. So the question was then, so the question was, why is she not kedei ksubasa? So why is it then, and then in this case, she's only entitled to collect up to the value of her ksuba? The reason is, she messed things up for herself by saying that I was divorced. If she hadn't told us that to begin with, if it was just the usual case where Adam came and said to her husband, they said definitively, but they said there's hearsay that he's dead, then we would follow the usual rules. We'd say we'd start giving him his earnest, and there's no particular limit to it until we find out. Either he comes back, or we find out definitively that he's dead. Like this, where she said that I'm divorced, then that messes up her case. It means that, yes, maybe she's entitled to the ksuba, but since we can't fully believe her on that, then we only she can only get up to the value. She can only get his earnest up to the value of her ksuba. Because her
person said nothing.
If she hadn't said anything, yes, she'd be entitled to mizonis indefinitely, pretty much. Like this, she herself is saying, I'm a grusha, I'm entitled to a ksuba. Therefore, we're saying, fine, it maxes out at the value of your ksuba. So still no proof against Shmuel. Toshma, ketzad omru mema'enes ein lamizonis. What does it mean when we say that a mema'enes does not get, that a girl who does miyun does not get mizonis? Now, it can't be talking about where she hasn't yet done miyun. She's of the age where she could do miyun, but she didn't. She's still living happily with her husband. Well, then obviously, she'll buy the chayiv mizonis. Then, of course, her husband is obligated to feed her. The case is that her husband went overseas. Love savachla. She borrowed money from somebody else in order to eat. Amdo miyana. And then she went and did miyun. Which, if she, which the point is, if she hadn't done miyun, if she's a gdolah who can't, or she's a kano who never did, then we'll learn in the next mission of the machlokes whether in that case the husband has to reimburse the loiva. That we'll get to. We'll get to the gemara and the discussion on that. But since she did miyun, so that's the thing. Time of the miyana, because she did miyun, we're saying that she loses out. She's going to now have to repay this person she borrowed from. She can't expect her former husband to, because now she did miyun. halay mi'ana yavidinla, which implies that if she didn't do mi'un, we would give her. We would, she would be entitled to mezonos, and therefore if she's borrowing money for it, then she's entitled to be reimbursed. Yeah. But if she hadn't, that's the thing, that's why the husband's not responsible. But if she hadn't done mi'un, then the husband would be responsible to reimburse, which is effectively the same thing as saying that which is effectively the same thing as saying that Beis Din to begin with should arrange that she should get mezonos.
How did Beis Din allow a ksana to do mi'un without any knowledge of the consequences that she would have? She's a ksana after all.
First of all, she could be an older ktana called Onus HaPortos, which is old enough to understand what money is and what buying and selling is. Yeah.
I'm saying
okay.
She's not old enough to understand.
If she's not old, then there's nothing to talk about, yeah. I mean, we learned anyway in Yuvamas that below a certain age, she doesn't even need to do miun per se anyway. She can just go back home, but yeah.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, Amalach Shmuel, Hachal, my Nechoshla, because the difference is, with a Ktana, there's no reason to be concerned about either of the considerations we said so far. Imishim Tzrori, if it's that you're concerned that he may have given her a bag of money to support herself, Tzrori L'Ktana Le'Matbis. Nobody gives a bag of money to a little girl. She'll spend it frivolously. The Imishim Maisi Adair, and if you're concerned that he may have made the Maisi Adair Kenegan Mezenesea deal, that you'll keep your Maisi Adair, normally Ktana Le'Sofka, usually a Ktana's. Usually, if Tana's mighty yodel are not enough for her to live off of.
Unless she said she's very energetic.
If it could happen that she's energetic, we learned yesterday. But ordinarily, that's not the case. So Shmuel would say that yes, that's it. So therefore, Tana is different. Just like we said yesterday about a Shemeres Yavam is different. Similarly here, Tana, the same thing. Neither of the usual considerations would apply.
Therefore,
I agree that in that case, Beis Din is responsible to arrange mezonos, and if they didn't arrange it, then she goes and borrows, then her husband is going to have to reimburse her, as long as she didn't do miyun.
If he passed away, she has to.
Then if he passed away, then if we know definitively that he passed away, two Adim came,
right.
Then she'll be entitled to her ksuba, then there's the usual rules. She can be collecting mezonos indefinitely. I mean, even with the previous case also, with the previous case also, a couple of cases ago, when we said that she came and said mes bali, we said if she wants she can get mezonos, if she wants she can get her ksuba. Rashi points out over there that she has the benefit over there. She might want to collect mezonos, figuring just in case if it turns out that my husband is not dead, if he's still alive, I'll have collected mezonos all this time, and I'll still have my ksuba will still be intact for later because he's required. The point still remains that she's entitled to mezonos all this time, and if it turns out, or if we find out for sure that her husband's dead, then she can continue collecting mezonos as long as she's an almona, or she can collect her ksuba, and then at that point she's off mezonos.
And we give her the choice.
The Mahashtos may be based in Setsa Padavaturopos. Okay. So far we still have not been able to disprove Shmuel. Fine. My Havialoa, what's the bottom line? What is the halacha? So, Ki Osir of Dimi Amar, when Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he reported, Maisaba Lifnei Rebbe Bebeis Sharim. It happened, such a case came before Rebbe that a woman's husband was out of town and she was demanding mezonos. In Beis Sharim, which we learned a few days ago, that was where Rebbe lived. Upasik lo mezonos. And he decided that yes, she needs to be given mezonos. So we need to go into the husband's property and start wheeling and dealing with it. Lifnei Rabbi Shmuel ben Tzipori. Then either the same case or a different case came to Rabbi Shmuel and Tzipori. The low pasuk on mezonos, and he did not arrange mezonos for her. So it seems to be machlokas tanaim. And the question is, Tohi bar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was thinking into that. Tohi can have two possible meanings. We learned the other day the expression that Kauna, we said Tohi ba'ambra, he would sniff around in a wine cellar. So Tohi can mean like Rabbi Yochanan, it's sniffing around on this statement of Rabbi Shmuel and trying to figure out the underlying reason. Or it can be Tohi meloshen Toiha, like he's wondering at it. Whatever it is, why would Rabbi Shmuel say that you don't arrange mezonos? The machlokas in the Mishnah between Chanan and the Bnei Kohanim Gedolim is only, both of them agree you give her mezonos. The question is only whether she has to swear before she collects them. But definitely mezonos we should have to give her. Everybody should agree on that. So, yeah. Apparently, Rabbi Yochanan did not know of the machlokas, Rav and Shmuel. So therefore, Amalei Rav Shaman Ba'aba, Rav Shimon Bar Abba tells him, you know what? Kvar Tigma, Rabbeinu Shmuel, B'Bavel, B'Shemes. You should know that Shmuel already explained in Bavel that the case is, it's talking about where they heard that he died. That would be the case. That would be the machlokes in the Mishnah. That the husband died. Where they heard, again, by hearsay, that he died. That would be when Chanan and the B'nai Kohen and B'Zolim are arguing, does she get Mazonis? And the question is only whether she has to swear or not. But the case over here with Rabbi Shmuel, nobody had heard that he's dead. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel might have said, like Shmuel, that she doesn't get Mazonis. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Shimon, Pastritu Bakule, hi. Have you guys in Bavel really analyzed this Mishnah so much to come up with that conclusion? What does that mean? Rashi Madura Kama, that's brought in Shita Mekubetis, says that basically Rabbi Yochanan is saying, I think you guys overthought this. That's not what the Mishnah means. And he's still left with the question. In a sense, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, I don't agree with that idea of Shmuel to distinguish between whether we know whether he heard he died or whether we didn't, that we should say it depends whether we get Mazonis. He would hold more like Rav. So therefore, he's left with the question: who was Rabbi Shmuel passing like? Okay. He also Robin Amar. When Robin came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he said that the story was the other way around. Ma'aseh b'lifnei Rabbi Shmuel, b'lifnei Rebbe Beis Shearim v'lo pasuk l'mazonis. It was just the other way around. The case came to Rebbe and Beis Shearim, and he did not arrange mazonis for her. B'lifnei Rabbi Shmuel b'tzipori pasuk l'mazonis. And then it came to Rabbi Shmuel in tzipori, and he did arrange mazonis. So exactly the opposite as before. And Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and again, Rabbi Yochanan was wondering, Ma'ra Rebbe shlo pasuk l'mazonis. Why, according to the second version, did Rebbe consider that she shouldn't be given mazonis? Because the machlokes in the Mishnah is only whether she has to swear. Al mazonis yavin in law, but everybody agrees she does get mazonis. And again, Amalei Rav Shimon ba'Abba kvartugim of Shmuel b'Bavel k'shama b'Shemes. That he told him Shmuel's explanation that the Mishnah is talking about when we heard that he died. The case of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi was talking about that we didn't hear any such thing. And again, Amalei pasritzu b'kulei. Hi, have you really analyzed the Mishnah that thoroughly to come up with this decision? Okay, what's the bottom line? The halacha in the end is like Rav, who poskin mezonis l'eishes ish. Therefore, an eishes ish who comes and says that I need mezonis, we do, Beis Din does arrange it for her. We do go into the husband's property and start selling and dealing whatever in order to raise money for her. And while the Gemara is mentioning that, it mentions two other halachas as well. In Shita Mekubetis, it brings two which don't directly. Well, one of them sort of relates to this, and one of them not at all. So Shita Mekubetis explains two possibilities. One is because we had in the previous sugya, we had the opinion of Rav Huna and Rav Zvid about the meaning of what Shmuel said. Therefore, we bring another halacha of his to say that the halacha is like him, given that what he said here about Shmuel was not relevant. Or another possibility is all three of these halachas that we're going to say were decided in the Mismedrash at the same time. So number one is the one that two possibilities. Yeah. So number one, the halacha is like Rav. Number two, Behilchas HaKavaseh de Rav Huna Amar Rav. The halacha is also like Rav Huna, who said in the name of Rav, the Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Yechoyle Isha Shetayim Levayla Eini Nizonis Veini Yoseh. A woman can tell her husband, I don't want you to support me, and I don't want to have to give you my Maithiyadah. That's a valid arrangement. And one more, Behilchas HaKavaseh de Rav Zvid B'Kunya. Also, the halacha is like Rav Zvid when it comes to Kunya. Rashi says that kunya is earthenware utensils that are plated with lead. So the question is, we know in halacha earthenware absorbs if it comes as far as chametz and pesach, as far as yain nesach, as far as tyrus, etc. Anything that involves yain nesach, anything that involves kli cheres is going to be osur permanently. On the other hand, lead is like any other metal; you can kasher it. The question is: here you have lead on top of earthenware. What takes precedence? Kuf Zayin Amud Beis at the bottom. According to Tosfos, we're not talking about. They're not. It's not a lead coating. It's a glass coating. What glass is chuchas? Yeah, but kunya would be the Aramaic word for it. But whatever. He quotes from the Aruch that it means glass. For one thing, because the Gemara is going to distinguish in a minute between whether it's the type that has alum or a type of alkaline salt mixed into it that tends to be in glass. It doesn't tend to be in lead.
But that is involved in crystal.
Yeah, you have leaded crystal. Yeah, okay. Anyway. The Amr of Zvid, Hani money de kunya, utensils of kunya, again, either that are plated with lead or with glass. Chivri v'uchmi, if they're black or white. Sharu, then they're allowed. If for example, Yain Nesach was put into them, then if the lead or glass plating is white or black, then it's a kind of thing that doesn't absorb. That doesn't absorb, and therefore it won't have absorbed the Yain Nesach, therefore you can just rinse them out and you can use them for kosher food. Yuruki asiri, but if they're green, then they're also, because the green ones have alum mixed into them, into the lead or into the glass. Alum is a kind of earth. They get aluminum out of it, hence the name. But it's very absorbent. When if you have a dish made out of it or plated with it or whatever, it'll absorb very strongly. Therefore, it becomes usher. All of this about that the black and white ones are mutter is only if they don't have cracks. But if the plating has cracks, asiri, that's also because then yeah, because then the wine will get in through the cracks into the cheres. Yeah. Doesn't say. But in Tzachim, actually, the Gemara explains that this is all as far as Yain Nesef. As far as chametz, we're even more machmir. With chametz, even the black or the white ones are also. Yeah.
But then I'll trek,
they also as far as chametz, meaning you have to break them before Pesach, as they used to do in those days, or sell them with chametz or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Misha Holachim, and this is going to be the second machloikas. We said in the beginning of the parak that Chanan had two machloikas in with the Chachamim, and Admon had seven, so here's the second one of Chanan. Misha Holachim Dinisayam, a guy went overseas, V'amad Echor Pirnesis Ishtay, and somebody goes and voluntarily supports his wife while he's away. So now is he entitled, when the guy comes back from Dinisayam, is he entitled to demand reimbursement for what he laid out? Chanan says that he lost his money. Mele, if the guy had told him before he's leaving, I'm going to leave. I want you to. I'm putting you in charge. I'd like you to lend my wife money, and I'll pay you back when I'm done. Then sure. But over here, he can argue. He can argue. I had nothing to do with it. Not she's supposed to starve, but she can do with her mycia tail. She can arrange on her own or whatever. There's a difference. He lent the wife. So we're saying fine. She's on the hook to. He can say she's on the hook to repay it. Myself, I have nothing to do with it.
He gave. The husband gave the wife.
No, a third party. So Rashi draws the distinction over here between whether this guy lent her money, she has to repay him. Now she's going and suing her husband for the amount of money. So if he had arranged in advance, sure, that was what we said before in the Gemara, that as long as she didn't do miun, then the husband is still responsible. But here nothing like that was arranged in advance. And so therefore, Chanan is arguing, Ibid es ma'isav, he lost his money. He laid it out, and then the husband can argue that I'm not responsible. So again, if he lent the wife, then she'll be responsible to pay. It's a question whether she can get it back from her husband. You were talking about that he wasn't even lent. No, so, sorry, that's the difference. If he lent it to the wife, then yes, she's entitled afterwards to go and recover that from her husband. Because yeah, like you say, she can't be left to starve. But like this, the guy didn't even say I'm lending it to you. He gave it to her. Your husband is away. What are you supposed to do? I'm going to give you some money. Now when the husband comes back, he's going directly to the husband and say, I want you to pay me back. Who told you to give her? I didn't ask you to give her.
He gave her matana.
Yeah, basically, if you wanted, you could have lent it to her, and then fine, I'd be on the
husband.
If he arranged on the floor, if he had lent it to the wife, either if he had arranged it, but if he arranged it with the husband, there's no question about it. But also, if he had arranged with the wife, I'm lending you money. You're going to be on the hook to repay me. Then, afterwards, she repays him, and then she goes and takes her husband to Beis Din to recover that. That would be fine. Yeah. The Bnei Kohanim Gedolim argued with Chanan. This third party will swear how much he spent, and he'll be entitled to collect it from the husband. So just like in the first Mishnah, Rabbi Dosev and Hokinas agrees with the Bnei Kohanim Gedolim. And again, just like in the first mission, Amr Rabbi Yechon and Zaka Yapa Amr Chanan, he says that no, Chanan said right. This guy who did it on his own, he niach ma'utzav akar natzvi. It's like he put his money on the horn of a deer. If you put money on the horns of a deer, it's gone. The deer runs away, and actually the Tosfos Yom Tov adds even more than that. Not only does the deer run away really fast, but also it sheds its antlers. So then you'll never find anything that was tied to them. So that's a metaphor to say, like, you know, the guy took a gamble, and then, yeah. Yeah, okay, but again, he could have done it in a way that still safeguards his rights. He could have lent her the money, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara is going to bring something from a Mishnah in Nedarim, so we'll be learning it in a few weeks' time, Bez Hashem, that bears on our Mishnah. It's non-hoss, and we learn in a Mishnah there. Hamudah hanah mechaveri, if somebody has made a neder that he's not allowed to have hanah from somebody else, so Reuben is not allowed to have hanah from Shimon, nevertheless, Shoyka Loyas Shikla, Shimon is allowed to pay the Machta Shekel on behalf of Reuben.
Why Machta Shekel?
The Machta Shekel that has to be paid to the Beis Hamikdash that he owes for the Korban HaTzibur. He can do that. It's not considered giving Reuben Hana for reasons that we'll talk about. He can pay a debt on his behalf. So Reuben owes somebody money. So Shimon can't directly give the money to Reuben. That would be violating the thing of Hana, but he can pay the debt on his behalf. Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities. First of all, Tosfos says that the case of this chov that we're talking about over here could be a case where it wasn't the loan had been given on a long term. Well, actually, the Gemara is going to say soon, right? Shalov amanach shaloi lefra. Wait, you know what? Let's learn a little further, and we'll see how the Gemara explains it. But for now, let's just take the Mishnah as written. He can pay a debt for him. He can return his lost object. And what about in places where the custom is that a person who returns a lost object is paid for his time, because he took all time from work? So then you can't pay him that, because that would be the case is, Tosfos points out that you have this from the Gemara over there, that you can have a case where Reuven has made a neder not to have anah from Shimon, and Shimon has also made a neder not to have anah from Reuven. So now you can't pay him his schar for returning the lost object. That would be giving him anah. You can't not take the payment, because that would also be giving him anah. So what do you do? Tipul hanah lehekdish. You take that hanah value and give it to hekdish. Now that's thus far the Mishnah. So let's consider Bishlema Shokalaya
Shikla.
They both excluded each other. Right. So, Bishlema Shokalaya Shikla, I can understand why he's allowed to pay the Machta Shekel on behalf of Reuven. Mitzvah Kavod, because there, what he's doing is a mitzvah. It's not a matter of Hana. Because even if Reuven, suppose that Reuven were to not pay that Machta Shekel, he still would have a portion of the Korbanos. He would still have a portion of the Korbanos, so he's not gaining. Furthermore, also, Mefarshim point out, there's also the matter of, there's a machlokas in a few places in the Gemara, where the mitzvah lehonis nitnu or mitzvah lav lehonis nitnu, is the hana that comes along with the mitzvah, is that considered a hana? So one way of looking at it is that yes, and in that case, then Rashi has to point out over here that nevertheless, there's not really a hana, because he would have had the mitzvah participating in the Korbanos HaTzibur anyway. According to if we look at it, mitzvah slav lahanas nitnu, then there's nothing to talk about anyway. Then there's no hana involved. Rashi also adds, by the way, the fact
that's
that
halacha, right?
The halacha of mitzvah slav lahanas nitnu, yeah. Also Rashi points out the detail that the who's going to get the schar of the mitzvah is going to be Shimon, the one who's actually giving it is going to be giving the money. Therefore, that's also a matter of the hana is going to Shimon, not to Reuben. So fine, Shimon is not giving hana to Reuben. So, the shekel is fine, mitzvah kavod, then he's doing a mitzvah, detnan, or detanya, termin ala avud, when the guy who does the trumas alishka goes in, takes out the money and puts it into the boxes to spend, he takes out the money on behalf, including also whatever was lost. So, for example, Rashi says somebody sent his master shekel and it got lost on the way. Va'ala govui, as well as having in mind whatever was already collected and is on the way and hasn't reached Yerushalayim yet. Vala osid ligovis, and as well as whatever is going to be collected, which Rashi says means even if it ends up not being collected. So you have a person who owes a machta shekel, for whatever reason he doesn't end up giving it. Nevertheless, they still have in mind, so he should have a share in the korbanos.
Even if it has
it's a matter of that they have him. Yeah, I guess it's Machshava Tova. I mean, the truth is, we learned in Shalim that actually the Shulchanim, the people who are collecting the Shulchanim, the people who are collecting the money, have the right to take a mashkin from him. They have the right to take a collateral from him if he doesn't pay his master shekel. But still, I mean, we had a few cases over there that were Kohenim who even though they have to pay master shekel, if they didn't, then we don't take a mashkin from them if they daka Shalim. No, any Kohenim, because we learned over there was a machlokas there between Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai and Ben Kuvri or Ben Bukhri, whatever his name was, about whether Kohenim Bechlau, Ben Bukhri held that Kohenim Apotter from Machshav Shekel, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai argued back to the Chayev, but still we passed to them from Mipnei Dakei Shalom. That's Rashi's explanation, by the way, of these three things: Ahud, Hagavri, and Alasad, and Alasad Ligavis. Tosfos explains it differently. Al-Avud means that it already reached the Gavoyim, it already reached the collectors, but then they lost it. Al-Gavri means that you sent it through a shliach, and it got lost on the way. And Ha'asid Ligavos, means where right now you haven't paid it yet, but it's going to end up being paid. What do you mean, how do we know? Let's say, for example, in the case of the collateral, we know that, you know, this person has not paid his master shekel, we took collateral from him. Eventually, presumably, he's going to want his collateral back. Yeah, it's expected, yeah. Okay, anyway, the point is, so therefore, paying off his master shekel is not really considered giving him a hana. And, also, returning him his lost object, also, nami mitzvah kar, but it's also, he's doing a mitzvah. You can't really call it that he gave him a hana. The object already belonged to him. Yes, he lost it, but you're just accomplishing a mitzvah. Again, yeah. He may well be happy, but that's not considered a tangible hana.
He hasn't made any profit from
it. Yeah. But why are you allowed to pay off his debt? How come ishtarshila? He's gaining by it. He's gaining, and now he doesn't have to pay that loan. Yeah. Amrabashia Hamani Khanani. Yeah. Actually, that Mishnah in Nedarim would have to be according to the opinion of Khanan of our Mishnah. Just like we're saying over here in the case of our Mishnah, that now when you think of it, the husband has an obligation to support his wife. This guy can argue that this guy, the third party who came and supported her, can argue, look, I effectively paid off your debt by giving money to your wife. Nevertheless, Hanan is saying we don't consider that payment, we don't consider that to be the payment of a debt. We don't say, therefore, so now the husband has earned from that he doesn't now have to pay that amount, and therefore he owes it to that guy. We say, give it his most of. He lost his money. Yeah. So the same way, therefore, in the Mishnah in Nedarim, Reuben owed money to somebody. Shimon went and paid it off on his behalf. That's not considered giving Reuben something. Reuben is not liable now to repay Shimon for it. He didn't say lend it to me. Right. One thing is, by the way, Tosfos points out a distinction between our Mishnah a distinction within our Mishnah. When we're talking, you were talking about before. So what she's supposed to do if this guy doesn't show up? Is she supposed to starve? So Tosfos says we're talking about, for example, you could have a case where regularly her Maisiyah Deir would not be enough to live on. But she could, you know, she'll work an extra couple of hours a day, let's say, and barely manage to raise the money to keep herself going. And then this guy gives her a break and lends her and gives her the extra money so that she doesn't have to do that. If she couldn't support herself at all, then yeah, that's different. Then the husband has an absolute obligation, and then there's no question. Rava says that no, the Mishnah in Nedarim could even be according to the Rabbanon of our Mishnah, meaning the Bnei Kohenim Gadolim, because Hachab Mayaskin and Shalava Amanat Shalai Lefraya, because the case in the Mishnah in Nedarim there is that the loan was taken out not with the specific date to be repaid. Reuven had borrowed money from somebody. A normal loan is in 1 year or 5 years or whatever it is, you have to pay it back, and if not, then I can take you to Beis Din, etc. This is basically Reuven had borrowed money essentially on his own credit. Like, you know, you pay me back when you're able to, essentially. So Reuven's credit to what?
I'm not sure.
It doesn't mean not to pay back at all. It means to pay. It means you can pay back at your convenience, basically. There's no specific date.
Uh-huh.
Well, then, in that case, so then there wasn't any kind of definitive thing that he was going to get it back anyway. So therefore, when Shimon pays, when Shimon goes and pays it, then we could argue Reuven can say, you know what, you didn't make me gain anything, because on my own also I could have gotten away without paying it. No, indefinitely. That's the whole point. Wait. So we have two explanations then of that Mishnah in Devarim. We have Rav Oshia's explanation that it's only a Daf Yachid, that's Chanan of our Mishnah, and you have Rava's explanation that it goes according to the Rabbanon.
Yeah.
That it can go according to the Rabbanon. So if Shleimer Rava lo Yomer Kerav Oshia, so I can understand why Rava didn't want to explain the Mishnah in Devarim like Rav Oshia. He would prefer to say that Mishnah goes according to the Rabbanon, goes according to Das Rabbim. Why doesn't Rav Oshia explain the Mishnah like Rava? Why does he prefer to understand it that it's the opinion of Chanan? The answer is Amalach Rav Oshia Nihida Hanah Lefle. Granted, in the case where you, Rava, are talking about, there's no absolute Hanah because he could have gotten away without, there's no specific time he had to pay the loan. Kisufami Lefle. But isn't there the embarrassment that whenever he sees this Malva, he has a guilty conscience that he hasn't paid him back? That itself is something. So if Shimon then goes and pays off that loan, sure, he hasn't caused him an actual financial benefit, but that's the point. That'll be the second explanation actually. He gave him a benefit that now he doesn't have to have that embarrassment anymore. Hasam nami islay hana, because there he has hana, ba'i hana, the mixif minay, namely the hana, that up till now he was embarrassed of him. Now that last line sounds repetitious, so Marav Ranchburg wants to take it out, but he brings that Marshal and also Hagoy Sabach say that's lishna achrina, it's another version of the answer. The first answer was we're saying it's an intangible benefit, the kisufa. The second one is we're saying that kisufa actually amounts to kind of a tangible benefit. It has a certain tangible value to it. The fact that now he's free of that. The fact that now he's free of that loan. So either way you look at it, yes. So Rav Oshia would argue to Rava that is considered a hana, and therefore Shimon can't be giving it to Reuven. The only way it could work is according to hana. Now we're up to. So that's the conclusion, is the two possibilities, the two ways of explaining that Mishnah. When we learn in Nedarim in a few weeks, we'll learn there's a sugya about it also that explains the whole matter in a slightly different way. We'll get to it. Okay. Then we said Adma Noim Shiva, the second of the Dayanik Zeris over there, had argued with the Chachamim in seven cases. Case number one, Misha Mesvi, most of these cases have nothing to do with the halachas of Ksubas per se. They're just, since we're mentioning them all together. Number one, Misha Mesvi Niach Bonim Abonis, somebody died and left over sons and daughters. Vizmancha Nechasim Merubin, if there's a lot of property, meaning there's enough for the daughters to be supported until they get married, Rashi says over here for a year, and there's still enough for the sons to inherit, then good. Abonim Yoshim, and the sons inherit, Abonis Nizonis, and the daughters are entitled to their maintenance. No Chiddush, wait. Or Nechasim Mu'atim, but if there's little property, Abonis Nizonis, here. So that part everybody agrees to. The Chiddush is, or Nechasim Mu'atim, if there's a small amount of property, Abonis Nizonis, then we say that the daughter's rights, according to the Chachamim, override Trump's son's rights. No, it means that the daughters go ahead of the sons. Habonis Yizoynu, the daughters get their maintenance, their 1 year or whatever it is. Habonim Yachzu Al Pesachim, and if there's nothing left for the sons, then fine, they'll have to go begging.
That's the
Chiddush. That's the Chiddush. And that's where the Machlokes. The point is, right, the sons, if they have to go begging for tzedakah, fine, it's not as much of a bizayin for them. For the daughters, it would be more of a bizayin. Now, here is the machlokes. Admonimer, what are you talking about? Bishvil shani zachar ifsadti. Just because I'm a boy, I lose out. Meaning, why should the boys lose out in this case? Lechora, we should say then in that case that what we should say then is that everybody gets equal rights over here. The daughters will get however much they can get. The sons will get however much they can get. And when it runs out, it runs out.
Last time,
yeah, we
saw that.
Okay. Amar Gamliel, Royan Admon. So Gamliel says, you know what? I agree with what Admon is saying. Tosfos points out that it's not necessarily that Admon is arguing per se, because Tosfos discusses the question, who is the halacha like? Tomorrow we're going to learn a rule that whenever all the cases that Rav Gamliel says royani, the halacha is in fact like that. So does that mean the halacha is like Admon over here? Tosfos says not necessarily, because Admon is not necessarily arguing with the Chachamim. He's just saying, I don't understand why you would be saying that. The halacha is a halacha, fine. I'm not arguing with the actual halacha, but how could that be? How is it logical?
Didn't we learn previously that the halacha was not like that? That the daughter's first, and then the son?
That's what Tosfos is arguing. Therefore, the halacha is like the chachamim, that the daughters go first.
Right.
If there's anything left, it goes to the sons. Right. So Admon, according to the simple way we'd understand it, is that Admon is actually arguing with that.
Yeah.
But Tosfos is saying, Rabbi Natan says, that not necessarily is he arguing. That, and, right, then, yeah.
That's because the chachamim or Admon?
That's the thing. The halacha is so one way of looking at it is the halacha should be like Admon because Yom Gamliel says I agree with him, so it should follow the general rule. But if you have an exception, I mean, there's only two cases where Yom Gamliel says Roy Ani is Divrei Admon. You can't really make a rule for one out of two cases. No. So, but the argument is that maybe over here Admon is not. Maybe the argument is that Admon is not arguing over here. He's surprised. How could the halacha be like that? But okay, the halacha is a halacha. Garnish, he's mentioning that it's a surprising thing. My karma, so what's the point, b'shvil shani zacha, what do you mean, because I'm a boy, I lose out? I'm going to buy a hakama. What he's saying, b'shvil shani zacha, v'roi lasik batorda, what are you saying? Because I'm a boy, and therefore I have the strength that I'm able to learn Torah, that's an advantage of mine, therefore when it comes to the chasim u'atim ifsadti, therefore corresponding to that, I lose out?
Question? Is it a question? Or
that's, we already davened Meir.
Yeah?
So go ahead. The point is when Admon is saying Bishvil Shani Zakhar of Sadti, it sounds like he's saying there's a certain case in which I have an advantage. So why, corresponding to that, do I have to have a disadvantage?
Because he has an advantage.
But that's what does one have to do with the other, he's arguing. The advantage is Minatorah, that I'm entitled to collect the property, that I'm entitled to Yarshin. Why, when there's Nechasim Muatim, should the daughter's rights completely trump mine? So what's the advantage that the Zohar has? Sabai is saying the advantage is the Zohar learns Torah, but now, therefore, you're saying that the disadvantage is that he would lose out over here? Amalei Rava, what do you mean? Man da asik v'torah hu diyaris, man da asik v'torah la yaris. What are you telling me? Only a person who learns Torah yarshin? The one who doesn't learn Torah doesn't yarshin? Learning Torah has nothing to do with these halachas. Ela Amar Rava, Hachik Amar, Bishvil Shani Zachar, Admon's argument is, what is, the boy can say, because I'm a boy, V'roi Lirash Ben Chasim Rubin, therefore it's my right to Yarshin if there's a lot of property. Therefore, if Sabti Ben Chasim Uatim, therefore my right should be completely overridden when there's Ben Chasim Uatim. No, everybody should just share equally. Next case, Atoyan...
Really against what we said last time.
But again, that's the question. Is Admon arguing, or is he just surprised at it? If it's an argument, then maybe the halacha should be like him because Yom Gamliel agrees with him. Yeah. Okay. Second case, a toynas chaver kadesh shemen. If somebody makes a claim against somebody else that you owe me barrels of oil, and he admits I owe you barrels, but not the oil. I owe you empty barrels. Admon says, well, he did admit to part of the claim. Therefore, it's motive mixas, and motive mixas, you have to swear.
Yeah, the Migui could have said, I don't know.
Motiv mixas, you don't use Migui. The Torah says that motiv mixas, that's a swear. There's no Migui.
I swear, but he could have said, I don't owe anything, not the Kankanim, not the oil.
But you don't, because... What's the reason? The Gemara explains in a few places, why does motiv mixas have to swear? Because there's a chazaka, a person is not going to be so brazen, a person is not going to be so chutzpidik, ain't not a maze ponim of Nebal Chovoy. If I actually owe you money, I'm not going to be so brazen as to deny it completely. What I would do is I'd try to stall for time. So I'll commit to only part of it, and then that way I'll pay that off now, and I'll stall for time until I can pay off the rest.
In the middle of the times of the Gemara,
in the times of Reb Nachman, when it became a problem that sometimes, yes, people did have the chutzpah to deny the whole thing, then they came up with the idea of Shavuot Hesis, or Shavuot Midrabanan, that yes, even a Kofer Hakol, even if somebody denies the whole claim, you make them swear Shavuot Hesis. But a Shavuot Hesis is still more lenient than a Shavuot Daraisa. The Motiv Mixas is to swear Shavuot Daraisa.
They were on some Madrega, even a Shavuot Hesis had an effect
on people. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay, so Admon is saying he's a Moedim Mixas. Well, a Moedim Mixas, that's a sphere. No, because it's not the same kind of Taina. The guy is claiming, the Teveya is claiming oil, and you're telling him, I owe you barrels. Amar Rav Gamliel, Roy Ani is David Admon. Rav Gamliel again says, I agree with Admon.
He agrees that...
That he should have to swear. Actually, there's three cases. Okay, there's three cases when Yom Gamliel says, Roy Ani Esti Admon, the previous mission of this one and the next one. Okay. Now, the question is, Shema Minyan LeRabbanan, does this mean, according to the Rabbanan, Tanich, so it means, apparently, according to the Rabbanan, that if in a case, Tanich Chitin Resorin V'Horda Resorin, if Reuven says, you owe me wheat and barley, and Shimon only admits to the barley, then he would be potter from swearing, because that's what the Chachamim are saying. Reuven is claiming, you owe me barrels plus oil. He admits, I only owe you barrels, and the Chachamim is saying he's potter. Problem is, Lema Tevit Yurta did Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. In that case, then that would seem to contradict what Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel. Damer Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, Tana Chitin Rasurin, Vahir Lebechaman. If Reuben claims you owe me wheat and barley, and Shimon says I only owe you barley, Chayev. Then he is Chayev. That would be like Admon. As opposed to the Chachamim. Tosfos discusses the issue. I mean, so what? You know, we could always say the halacha is like Admon. Tosfos answers because the machlokas in the Mishnah is talking about, as the Gemara is going to say later, chitim and sa'odim are two completely disjoint things. When you say chitim and sa'odim, one has nothing to do with the other. The barrels and the oil do have to do with each other. The oil is inside the barrels. So it's a different kind of situation, kind of. Okay. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, B'toyne Mida. Because the case in the Mishnah is talking about, it's not that he's claiming you owe me like 10 barrels of oil, meaning you owe me the 10 barrels plus you owe me the oil. No, you owe me the amount of oil, the volume of oil that would fit in 10 barrels. So Reuben is claiming oil. Shimon is saying, I don't owe you any oil at all, but I do owe you barrels. That's two completely different things. That's Tane Chitim V'Hadolah Disarim. That's you claiming wheat, and you're saying, I only owe you barley. Which everybody agrees you don't swear on that.
I owe you oil, but not in the amount of the kankanim.
Not in the kankanim. No, on the contrary. I owe you kankanim, but not oil. You're saying that I owe you 10 gallons of oil. I'm saying I owe you 10 one-gallon empty containers. Question is, Yehachi my time at the Admon? Well, then what's Admon's logic? Everybody agrees that Tana Chitim Bahodele Besarim is Potter. Ella Omer Rava, no. Dekula Alma, no. It's like this. Everybody would agree. Hecha de Omele Maloi Asara Kadesh Shemen Yeshli Bebarcha. Everybody would agree that if he says that I have by you 10 barrels worth of oil in your pit, meaning that you have a pit where the oil, after the oil is pressed, it goes into a pit and stays there until you put it into a barrel. If Reuben says to Shimon, you owe me 10 barrels worth of oil out of your pit, and the Shach and Shulchan Aruch points out that that's why we specifically mention the pit, because the point is, then obviously there's no barrels to be talking about. The barrels don't go in a pit. As opposed to if he were to say, the Shach said, and not everybody agrees with the Shach on this, but the Shach says that if he were to say instead that I have 10 barrels of oil, let's say, biyodcha, in your possession, then yes, maybe it means that he's claiming the barrels as well. But over here, he says...
If he doesn't say the pit, then he claims the barrels.
That's the Shach's argument, yeah.
And if he doesn't say
wait, you know what, let's learn the actual b'raisa, and then, yeah. So, not the b'raisa, the statement. If he says, Meloy asara kadesh shemen yeshli b'borcha, then there's no question, shemen katorin lay, then he's only claiming oil. He's obviously not meaning to claim barrels, and this is what the Shach says, because the fact that he used the word b'borcha implies there's no barrels involved. Whereas if he were to have said b'yodcha, for example, then it might well mean, then b'yodcha means in your hand, in your hand, in your possession. Right. Yeah. On the other hand, kankanim l'katorin lay, then he's obviously not claiming barrels. On the other hand, if he says asora kadesh shemen mileim yeshli etzlecha, that you owe me 10 full barrels of oil, then obviously shemen katanim katoim lo. Then he's obviously claiming the oil as well as the barrels because he specifically mentions them. He says asora kadesh shemen mileim, 10 full jugs of oil. So that means obviously it means the jugs and it means the oil. The machlokas is when he says you owe me 10 barrels of oil. What does that mean? Admon owe me yesh peloshna deloshin kakanim. So Admon says the word 10 barrels of oil implies the barrels as well as the oil. The Rabbanon savrein peloshna deloshin kakanim. Whereas the Rabbanon would argue that it doesn't necessarily mean the barrels. It just means that volume. It just means that volume of oil. Volume of oil, right.
Well, how much is the kankan then?
Whatever, it's a standard size container.
It is a volume of oil.
It's a volume, yeah. Mephoshim point out that actually what we would have to be talking about over here is, I mean, why don't we ask the guy, what are you claiming? So the Yerushalmi actually says that the situation is over here that after he made his claim, he became mute. But now he can't explain his claim any further. So we have to figure out, we have to deduce from what he said what he meant. Other Mephoshim say not necessarily. Maybe even once he made a claim, once he said, Asara Kadeshem and Yesli Esacha, we might not allow him to amend that and say, you know what, I really meant the Kankanim as well. So that would be the Machlokas then. So Admon holds that he's claiming the barrels as well. Therefore, the other guy is saying, I only owe you barrels. That would be the equivalent of Rav Nachman Amashmol's case. He's going to have to swear. Whereas Rabbanim say he's not claiming the barrels in the first place, only the oil. The other guy is saying, I only owe you barrels. That's Tane Chitim Vardilai Desardim. It's claiming one thing and then admitting a different.
So he doesn't have to swear.
So that's why they would say he doesn't have to swear. Okay. Well, then the question becomes, Ela Taima De'en B'loshen Az Eloshen Kankanim. Well, and according to that explanation, you're saying the reason is because the Rabbanim hold that the words Asura Kadesh Shemen don't imply the actual barrels, which would imply Hayesh B'loshen Az Eloshen Kankanim. But if we were to say that, like Admon says, that it includes the barrels, we would say that he's chayev to swear. Now the question is, now we're the other way around. Now the way we're understanding our Mishnah seems to contradict Rav Chiya Ba'aba. Not before we said that, we said the opposite of Rav Nachman. Before we said Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel that if you claim chitim with sa'odim and the other guy says, I only owe you sa'odim, he's chayev to swear. And we said that seems to contradict the Chachamim of our Mishnah. Now that we're explaining that the Chachamim are talking about the case where they're saying you b'chlal are not claiming the barrels, only the oil, and that's why you potter, implying, but if you were claiming the barrels and the oil and the other guy only said barrels, yet the Chachamim are saying you potter, but Rav Chiya Ba'aba says you chayev. Sorry, the other way around. No, if you were to say, according to the Chachamim, that you're claiming both, then the Chachamim would have to agree with Admon that you have to swear, but Rav Chiya Ba'aba says you don't have to even in that case. Should we say it's a contradiction to Rav Chiya Ba'aba? If Reuven claims you owe me wheat and barley, and Shimon says I only owe you barley, then he's potter from his hearing. That contradicts the way we're now understanding the Chachamim of our Mishnah. The reason for the difference is nase, because in our Mishnah nase it's the equivalent k'mishtana rimen b'klipasa. It's like when you're claiming a pomegranate in its shell. Chitim and sa'orim are two different disjoint things. One has nothing to do with the other. The barrels are the container for the oil, just like the shell is a container for the pomegranate. So when he claims chitim and sa'orim and he says only sa'orim, then we could argue he's potter. But if he's saying kadim shemen, true the chachamim are saying that he doesn't mean the actual kadim themselves, he only means to be claiming the shemen, only the oil itself. Nevertheless, the fact that the guy admits to the kadim is already considered to a certain extent be mixed as a taina. It's considered a certain portion of the taina.
Let me
rephrase that. So if we have a case where he's claiming the barrels plus the oil, and the other guy claims, so that's the thing. If he's saying you owe me barrels plus oil, and he says only barrels, that's different than chitim and sa'orim. Chitim and sa'orim have nothing to do with each other. But here he's saying I owe you barrels, and the barrels are sort of an integral part of the oil because they hold it. Therefore, that's more considered mimik tzatayna. So only because now we're saying the Chachamim and the Mishnah are saying that the words, you owe me 10 barrels of oil, in and of itself doesn't include the barrels, therefore he's potter. But if he were to be actually claiming the barrels, like Admon is saying, then he would be chayav. They don't agree. They don't disagree with Admon on that point.
They say that if he's not talking about the barrels, he is potter.
Then the one who says, I only owe you barrels, is potter. But if he is saying, you owe me barrels plus oil, then he would be chayev. Then they'd agree with Admon on that point. The machlokas with Admon is not, machlokas and Admon is not whether you have to swear in a case where you're claiming oil and barrels and you're saying only barrels. The machlokas between them is just, does 10 barrels of oil mean barrels as well or not? The difference is Reuven b'lo klipasa leminta. The difference is a pomegranate without its shell won't last. Shemen minta b'lo kankanim. Oil you can keep it without barrels because you can keep it in the pit. Yeah. So it doesn't really work. It's not really a fair comparison. No. Elahacha Mayaskin. And no, the case is rather like this. Of our Mishnah. Reuven says, you owe me 10 barrels of oil. And Shimon says like this. Shemen as far as the oil, there's nothing to talk about. Never happened. And even as far as the barrels, you're saying it was 10? No, chamisha islach or chamisha leslach. I only owe you 5. So, admana...
Out of the 10,
yeah. So now he's moidu b'mitzvah as far as the barrels. He's completely denying the oil. So, admana yesh p'loshen azeh loshen kankanim. So it does include the barrels. No, when he said asara kadesh shemen, It means that he was claiming not only oil, he was claiming barrels as well. He was saying, you owe me 10 barrels. The same as we said before, that when we say asara kadesh shemen, Admon says that automatically the word kadesh shemen automatically includes the barrels. Same thing over here. When he says, you owe me 10 barrels of oil, it means you owe me 10 barrels plus the contents of them, the oil. He's saying, no, I only owe you 5 empty barrels. So Admon says like this, you're claiming that you owe barrels as well as oil. Well, umigur de mishtabach kankanim, therefore, since we're going to make Shimon swear on the 5 barrels that he's denying, because he's moving to mix us on those, mishtabach nami Hashemin, ayide gilgul, we can make him swear on the oil through gilgul shavua. Gilgul shavua, we talked about a few weeks ago, that once you're being brought to Beis Din to swear on a stronger claim, you can be made also to swear on a weaker claim, which by itself not. So Admon is saying like this. If you had only brought him to Beis Din over the oil and he's denying... No, it's from Jared Isa. We learn it from the Saita. If Reuven had said to begin with, you know what, there's no barrels involved, but you owe me 10 gallons of oil, and he says, no, I don't owe you anything at all, that's kofer hakol, there's nothing to swear about. So Reuven doesn't have a leg to stand on to make him swear. But since, according to Admon, Reuven is also claiming barrels, and Shimon is denying half of those, he has a reason, d'oraisa, to make him swear on the barrels, therefore already Gilgul Shmuel can make him swear on the oil as well, even though by itself it wouldn't be a strong enough claim. But Rabbanon Masavri ain't Veloshin as a Loshin Kankanim, whereas the Rabbanon argue that the words Asara Kadesh Shemen does not include the barrels, it only includes the oil itself. Therefore, Mashatano Lehodolo, Mashahodolo Letano. Therefore, what Reuven is claiming, the oil, Shimon is completely denying. And what Reuven is not claiming, the barrels, Shimon is admitting to. So it's Tanei Chitim, Bahadur Le'Besarim. You're claiming A, and you're admitting to B, and there's no Shavua in that case. There's nothing to do Gilgul Shavua on either. And that's why the expression in the Mishnah is that Admon is saying, according to this understanding, this is why Admon says in the Mishnah, Hoyo V'Hoydim Miktas Atayne Yeshava. We understood it to be, he has to swear because he's a Moedim Miktas. Now we're putting a different spin on it. Because already he's a Moedim Miktas on one thing, therefore Yeshava will make him swear by Gilgul Shavua on the other thing. Not because he's moedim miktas on these barrels themselves, but because he's moedim miktas on the barrels, therefore we'll make him swear on the oil.
Which is a gilgul
shavua. With the Rabbanan say, there's no moedim miktas over here, therefore there's nothing to hook on to a gilgul shavua onto. Yeah.